Welcome to Mission Critical with Lance Chung, the show where we explore the ideas, strategies, and people shaping the future. For the next four episodes, I'm so excited to be bringing you inside the 2025 Glory Sports Summit, where we brought together Canada's top sports leaders to tackle the biggest questions in the game. From the 2026 FIFA World Cup to the rise of women's sports and more, these are the conversations at the intersection of sport, culture, and impact. Enjoy. In less than a year, Toronto will serve as one of the key host cities for the 2026 FIFA World Cup, welcoming fans and teens from around the globe. Now, sure, this opportunity is about roaring stadiums and match days, but it's also about building a lasting legacy of excellence, representation, and pride in Canadian soccer. Our final conversation of the day will dive into how Canada Soccer is preparing for this pivotal moment, from building a competitive national team to activating major partnerships that connect with communities coast to coast. Leading this discussion, we're thrilled to welcome to the stage one of the most respected voices in Canadian sports broadcasting, Andy Petrio. And as the weekend host of CBC Sports and a trailblazer in Canadian sports media, Andy brings deep insight, sharp analysis, and a passion for storytelling that cuts across every sport that she covers. A big round of applause for Andy. Joining her on stage, we have Jesse Marsh, who is the head coach of the Canadian men's national soccer team, a tactical mind and transformative leader tasked with preparing Team Canada to compete on the world's biggest stage. A round of applause for Jesse, please. And Bob Park, Chief Brand Officer at GE Appliances, a leading brand partner of Canada Soccer, bringing creative vision and strategic investment to how the game is marketed and experienced across the country. A round of applause for Bob, please. Together, they'll explore how Canada is not just preparing to host the world, but to belong on the world stage. So without further ado, Andy, I'll let you take it away.
Thank you. And that was great, Lance, because it's never easy when you're trying to introduce people and they're just staring at you, making sure it's a really good introduction. And it was. So thank you very much. I know you want to hear from these two gentlemen quickly, but just a few words to say that obviously we are a proud soccer nation, and I hope you've been enjoying the day and hearing some great stories and, you know, where we've come from and where we're going. There's a lot to be proud of with our national teams, both the men and women, and what they've accomplished. This panel, of course, will focus on the men because we have a World Cup coming, if you haven't heard that already many times today. Very exciting for Toronto and Vancouver, with each of them hosting five group stage games. Toronto will also host a round of 32, Vancouver a round of 16. So we are excited about that, and there's a lot to work towards. But I often find that sport, like life, has its ups and downs. Canada Soccer is definitely, you know, riding that roller coaster as well. And when it comes to investment, something I'll get into with Bob, is that when times are down, that's the easiest time to leave. And that helps no one. That does not help progression and advancement of sport in your country at all. And we're going to dive more into that topic, but to give you a little bit of context of the ups and downs.
Canada gold at Tokyo 2020. Canada came, Canada conquered.
We as players sometimes have to make choices about which medical treatments to receive when staff physiotherapists are stretched.
We can't afford to set up games that matter. You guys have to pick between flying to Australia and getting paid.
Our sport is at a critical moment in Canada.
What kind of message are we sending to the youth who dream of representing Canada?
GE Appliances Canada have launched a special program, What's on the Line?
GE Appliances Canada has put out an open letter criticizing Canada Soccer.
They're asking Canadians to join them in supporting women's soccer by sharing their own one-day hopes at whatsontheline.ca.
One day, we won't have to work two jobs.
One day, we won't have to leave Canada to play professionally.
There are a million one days, unfortunately, when it comes to women's sports.
Join me. Together, let's change the game.
One day.
Canada Soccer has reached a compensation agreement with the national women's team
for equal pay with the men's team for 2023.
We are announcing that we are building a women's professional soccer league in Canada.
Thank you, GD Appliances, for taking on this crusade.
My daughter is amped for her future.
GE Appliances supporting women's soccer.
It changes women's and girls' lives.
Hey. So now that we're up to speed and all the laundry's been done, let's dive a little bit more into GE Appliances, because you've made a significant contribution to Canadian soccer. What was behind that decision?
It's a pretty long story, but like I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. We had signed on to sponsor Canada Soccer years ago. And the idea that I had behind it was quite simply, soccer is the most participated sport in Canada, and it is also the fastest growing sport in Canada. The target demo, these are all business reasons, the target demo we were after was the demo that soccer, the game, was attracting, young families. Affordability is what makes soccer so popular, is that it doesn't take a lot, like hockey, for example, to participate in this game, this beautiful game. So it all made sense. We knew the World Cup was coming in 2026. And then, with soccer in Canada, and Canada Soccer, the organization, it was scandal after scandal after scandal. And a lot of sponsors for Canada Soccer had actually already pulled out. And then finally, we're at this breaking point, literally millimeters away from saying, we need to pull out of this. And that was where there was a huge issue with pay equity between the men's national team and the women's national team. And having looked somewhat behind the curtain and speaking with the executives at the time at Canada Soccer, those inequities did exist, 100%. The second thing was, Canada Soccer, and still to this day, has a challenge of raising enough funding to properly support our national teams, both men and women. And they made a choice. It was an inequitable choice. So I remember being there, and I had a few days to really think about what we were going to do. And I realized to myself that, how is GE pulling our funding actually going to help the game in Canada, what we signed on to do? It wouldn't. Actually, if all the sponsors pulled out, it makes it so that you don't have Jesse here. You don't have us ranked 28th in the world right now. All of these different things just don't happen because we're not supporting these talented teams to do their very best. These people are representing our country, whether they are men or women. So the answer that we came up with was to write a letter. And in that letter, I basically told them, I'm going to give you more money. I'm going to provide increased funding to the program. But I earmarked that money specifically to support the women's national team. You don't get the money if you don't spend it here. And where they spent it were trainers, flights, basic necessities that a team needs to go to compete in Australia that year and have a chance of winning. So doing that, I wrote an open letter because I wanted to write a challenge out there, and it got picked up by various press outlets because I wanted it to be public and transparent that this is what we're doing and Canada Soccer needs to step up. They had to. I talked to the then president or the secretary of Canada Soccer at that time. They had no choice. I'd say they kind of didn't like it, but they had to agree with it because I was maintaining my sponsorship. Internally, at GE, I'm still here, but I might not have been. They didn't like it because the easy thing to do is pull out. That's why other sponsors pulled out. Just, we don't want a part of this inequity, but that doesn't create a solution and that doesn't help the program. In the end, we stuck true to what GE is all about, and we wanted to support this game. We committed to supporting this game. Fortunately, it did turn out positively, and you know, we have a new management, new regime in Canada Soccer. We have an amazing coach in Jesse, all of this talent starting to develop, and we're hurtling towards a World Cup in Canada, and we're hurtling towards it with a very, very competitive team, and also a continually competitive team in the women's national team. So hopefully that...
Well, and there are a lot of people who are quite grateful that you stuck with it, because it is very disheartening when you see people pull out, because it's like, well, what is the solution? And I wonder, when you approach it from a brand perspective then, how can brands actually help shape the culture of a sport as opposed to just reflect it?
So that's a good question. I was actually just in Cannes a month ago speaking on this, and the topic of what I spoke about was being bold. I think these days, especially with the internet and social media, real-time information, consumers, right from adults to children, they're a lot smarter now. You have so much information available to you. You can't be disingenuous or ingenuous to consumers anymore. The best thing to do is be transparent and be genuine and be true to what your brand and whatever your product is that you stand for. For GE, our slogan or our mantra is good things for life. But I added to that, and really what it means is good things for life means good things for everyone, regardless of gender, ethnicity, whatever it might be. I want to sell a washer to you no matter what you look like, how tall you are, how short you are. That's what GE is all about. So by being bold, standing up for what we felt was right with the women's national team, it actually ended up very positive. Our positive sentiment after that went up exponentially. Sales also increased. So all those things that we were trying to do with soccer, just by being bold and standing up for what we believe is a brand, it turned out positive.
And then Jesse Marsh enters the equation, and it's been just a little over a year now that you've taken over the job. I remember the first two games there, France, Netherlands, and everyone just went, and Copa America was fantastic. And you look at the year that was for you, how's it been?
It's been great. It's been outstanding. You know, I don't know if I could maybe mirror some of the things that Bob said, because there was a time period that Canada approached me a couple years ago, and I was coaching in Europe and trying to think about what my next step might be there. And I'd heard that the organization was a little bit messy, and so it didn't seem like it was the right time. And then I met Kevin Blue, who's the Secretary General, and I could tell right away that this was an advanced thinker, an intelligent person, someone who had a plan, someone who had an idea for how to structure things, which, when you do this for a living, you'd be amazed how many jobs that you go into where everybody just wants to do my job and not their job.
People telling you who the starting 11 should be?
Bob,
what are you talking about?
And one of the reasons I like Bob is he doesn't want to do my job. He wants to sell washers and dryers.
I actually want the team to win.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. But I believed, look, even listening to everyone speak here today, listening to Bob speak, there's such a genuineness in general, I think, to the Canadian persona. And I knew that. I had coached in Montreal. I'm an American. I'm from Wisconsin. You know, and some of the guys joke that Wisconsin's just another province, some of the guys on the team, because I think we hold similar values about people and about kindness and generosity and helping your neighbor, and that has always resonated deeply, deeply with me about Canada. And then I always, always knew that the players are good. And, you know, in our sport in this day and age, there's been so much more made of coaching. And I've said this from the day I started coaching, Good players make good coaches, not the other way around. Our job is to maximize the potential of what they can achieve together, but I'm only as good as what the players are, and we happen to have a really, really you happen to have a very talented group of footballers, so you should all be very proud.
Well, we can't wait to see them in action, and let's get right to it, because this is the excitement. It's the World Cup that's coming next summer, and I know heading into Qatar 2022, everyone was wondering, you know, would Canada get its first point? Would Canada get its first goal? Would Canada get its first win? We know the goal came. What are maybe some goals that you've set out? Have you to say, hey, we want to hit these three things when we, or do you not want to do that because of any kind of pressure? Or is that something you do?
Yeah, I mean, look, people in the media and people in social media and in the communities may be putting more pressure on the team because there's higher expectation. And we, I relish in that. I want that to be the case. I want people to love the team and expect a lot out of the team. And I know Gold Cup was a failure for us and for a lot of people, a big disappointment. But in general, right, if you look at the World Cup strategy, which everything I've done over the last year and everything I will do over the next year will be about making sure that we are as prepared as we possibly can be for next June. But the format of the tournament makes things very clear. We'll be in pot A, which is the pot that will have all of the seeded teams. So it'll be like US, Mexico, Canada. And then it will be the next nine biggest powers in the world: France, Belgium, England, Argentina.
Italy.
Well, if they make it, Andy, if they make it. And then, you know, theoretically, we would draw teams that are somewhere between 12 and 24, and then 25 and 36, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. But for us, we have one game in Toronto, then two in Vancouver. If we finish second or third in the group as one of the third teams that qualify, we go to the U.S. to play our next matches. If we win the group, we stay at home. We stay in Vancouver for two more matches. So I can talk to the team about what the goals are, but at the start, we're all very clear. We have to win the group. We have to win the group. And when we win the group, then we can really have a chance of making history.
Okay, so that sounds like some goals there are not just to get points, but to get full 3 points and get the first ever win at a World Cup for the men. Very exciting. And you mentioned the Gold Cup, and I think that's what I always find interesting in conversation with sports, is because a lot of times people want to make sports linear. So if you do well in Copa America, well, obviously it's going to mean you're going to do well at this tournament. If you finish fourth, then that means you're going to finish third, and then the next one you're going to... That's not how it goes. How do you handle that? The ebbs and flows and still keeping everyone on track and know that that goal is 2026.
Look, it's been pretty linear in my time here. Mm-hmm. And if I were to go back, like even a few months ago, I kept saying to our staff, things are too linear right now. You know, things have really come together in a good way. It's a good team. They're understanding how we want them to play. They're understanding who we want them to be. But we need bigger challenges. We need to have some failures. We need to be able to look more carefully at ourselves to understand that not everything is as good as it seems. And I always say that in sports, in life, whatever, you're never as good as people think you are, and you're never as bad. And the ability to stay very focused and understand exactly what the touch points and details are for what is making a team successful and what are the challenges for them to get better and improve. Going into the Gold Cup, I knew it was going to be a different kind of tournament than Copa America. The opponents were going to be different kinds of challenges. The team makeup was a little bit different, but I say that when I came in and I had my first job, my first game on the job, which was in Holland, and I even said to the staff, okay, if we were to just say, how many names could we put on the board right now that we can be pretty sure that if they're healthy, they're in the squad for 2026? And we came up with 12 names. And that scared me at that moment. I was like, okay, this will never be good enough with 12 names in 2 years. And one of the things is we need to integrate more players, more young players. We need to challenge them to understand the way that we want to play, the way that international football operates. We need to give them also through the national team the opportunity to show how good they are within what we're creating so that they can potentially have the opportunity to go to bigger clubs and bigger challenges, and that needs to be part of the growth process as well. And as much as Gold Cup was very frustrating for me from a results perspective to not give ourselves a real chance to win the title, we improved the squad, no doubt. And if you ask me now, the number would be 20, maybe 21, maybe 22. So my mantra with the team has been 26 for 26. We need 26 players that no matter what the scenario, what the opponent, what the type of game, we need 26 players that we know can handle those pressures, are up for the challenge, and can help us be successful. So in that sense, we took big steps forward.
I'm curious to know, because there are a lot of players right now on the national team where there's some question marks just about their pro, where they're going to play professionally, whether they're going to go on loan somewhere. Some of them are out of contracts. We know Jonathan David just signed with Juventus. We know Tejan Buchanan is about to make a decision as well on where he's going to go. Are you in conversation with these players? Like, do you advise them maybe where would be a best fit based on minutes played, how that would affect the national team? Just how involved are you when it comes to them making decisions professionally?
Yeah, in general, I try to only be supportive in whatever way they need me. So, but an example, I had a call with a very good young player today. So you talked about transfers. I think we could have between 10 and 15 transfers this summer, which could be a little problematic, right? So we need these guys to find stable environments where they're challenged, but they're able to play week in and week out. But I had one of the players reached out to me this morning, and we spoke for a little bit. He told me about two clubs that he's considering. And, you know, one of the benefits of having me as the coach is I have experiences of being in Europe, and I know a lot of the clubs and the sport directors and the coaches. And so I knew the two coaches personally. And so I was able to make a phone call to both coaches and just say, look, if you're considering this player, this is what he's like, and this is what it's been like to coach him, and this is what I think his potential is. And ultimately, I'm a fan of all those guys when they go with their clubs. But again, I tell you, this is one of the easiest teams to be such a big fan and so supportive of all the lads because they're such amazing people. Like, again, like, as much as they're good players, I think they're even better people. And so you wind up, I never thought I would be like a father figure as a coach, but in this process of really investing in all of them and in their lives and their families and in this team, I just find myself in that scenario. And the more that I can without telling them what to do or needing to always advise them, it's more about knowing that they have me as a resource and that whatever they need from me, that they can count on me and that they always know that I'm behind them and with them every step of the way.
And Bob, you're hearing this, and it's humanizing, right? The coach is humanized, the players are humanized, because when you do think of sponsors and brands, oftentimes it's just like, you know, throw a logo somewhere or just put a promotion out for the brand. But you've been very adamant in saying it is about the people and the people behind the scenes too. So when you just also get to know the team more, get to know the players more, get to know the organization more, how important is it to go beyond just the logo of a sponsor?
Actually, that's a good point. One of the first things I tell my team is the last thing I want to do is put my name on a field board. That you mail it in and call it a day, and a lot of sponsors will do that. But you're not really ingraining yourself and you're not being genuine with what you're trying to support, whether it's the team or, for us, the game of soccer in Canada. So oddly enough, I guess most recently, one of the things that I'm most proud of or happy about or pleased with GE and what we've done lately is really helping Canada Soccer start to develop the Canada Soccer Foundation. So we just actually recently held an event about a month ago in early June in Toronto, and it was our very, or Canada Soccer Foundation's very first fundraiser. And the reason for that and really getting involved with that as a brand is, again, we're committed to growing the game in Canada, but as I was speaking with Jesse, you know, over and over again, the World Cup window in 26 is going to be a nuclear detonation. But the game of soccer needs to exist in Canada and thrive beyond 2026? Why can't Canada be a top 10 nation, a powerhouse in soccer? I don't see any reason why. One of the things Jesse and I were just talking about, I wonder how many Alphonso Davies are in the population right now that we haven't discovered. Because the foundation, the resources, the structure are not there. So as a brand, one of the things that we want to do is help foster that. So what we did was we had the first fundraiser. We've been heavily involved in the Canada Soccer Foundation. Actually, Toronto's board member of Canada Soccer Foundation is here, Lily Lee. So Lily, why don't you stand up? And what we're doing is we're putting the pieces in place to help drive funding. I had a conversation with Jesse. I said, Jesse, what do you need to be successful? You remember that? In 2026. And I asked him for a price tag. I'm not going to say what it was, but he gave me one. Still working on it, right, Lily? Okay. But that is what companies need to do. That is what brands need to do. And then hopefully, at the end of the day, you endear yourself to the consumers and you appear to be what you are, which is genuine.
I love hearing that, but at the same time, I get a little disappointed because I do love it when brands and sponsors really mess up logo placement, because we can talk about it. Who here can forget the Hockey World Championships, the cows, those poor refs? No one's going to forget the cheese all over them, and they did not deserve to look like that. So I'm so happy that you care about the people and not just about the logos. What is the men's identity when you talk about this team and people want to know, are they an offensive team? Are they a strong defensive team? What is the identity of the soccer team?
Of Canada?
Yeah.
Well, I use the word a lot, Canada's DNA. And for me, the DNA is speed and power. And when I took over the team, I showed them some statistics and I showed them some things that were happening with the team where it was an over-focus on ball possession, right? And, you know, Canada has a lot of really talented players, but it's still a developing football nation. And so to be able to command the game the way that Spain does or France does or Germany, or I'm not going to include Italy, sorry, Andy. Okay, but
happening?
Like this is like, you know, when I lived in Germany, I had a family there and my kids were growing up playing soccer in Germany as well. And like the way that the kids see the game on TV and watch their idols and their heroes and the league and the access they have to the sport is just at a different level. It's what hockey is here, right? And this is why the hockey players can watch their heroes and emulate them and become them ultimately. And so as we're still developing that, the one thing we have in abundance is speed, athleticism, and aggressiveness. And so, look, I'm known for this kind of football. I'm an aggressive personality. Maybe you've heard me talk publicly about a few different things. I'm just getting started. No, I'm kidding, Andy. But I believe that if you want something in life, you go and you get it. You know, you don't wait for it to happen to you. And I think that too many times football is boring to watch. Football teams are too passive, and they think that the way to win the game is to protect their own goal. Of course, you have to have strategies and pragmatism at any time, but I want to coach players that are aggressive, that are inherently fast and want to go after something. And I believe that most people are built this way anyways, especially high-level athletes. So there was a strategy in coming here. The player pool could do the things that I like to do in the game, and I thought I was the right fit for them the way they were the right fit for me. And so even as we're continuing to build, so Bob brought up, well, how much money do we need to win the World Cup? And quite honestly, one of the reasons I took this job as well was not just because of what we could achieve with the first team and the fact it was a home World Cup. Obviously, those are incredibly enticing elements of what the job is. But I say this, and I try to not do it insultingly, but our youth national team opportunities for our boys and our girls throughout our country, it's worse than most African nations. And that is a massive statement, because those countries are incredibly underfunded and don't have the ability to give their youth what they need. And this should not be the case in this country, right? This country has enough wealth, enough support, enough infrastructure, enough care, that this sport can be at the forefront for both genders. Casey and I work very, Casey Stoney is the women's coach. Like, we, on Friday, we just had an hour and a half video session with each other, talking about each other's teams, commiserating on our last losses. But there is a massive opportunity here to build something that is long-lasting, that can be very unique, and that can be unified on every level. It's one of the beauties of things not being structured so well, is actually, as we're building it, we can kind of do it in whatever way we want, because it's a bit of a blank slate. So anyway, that's a long answer, okay? But the point is that the sport has so much potential, like, I'm right with you, Bob. Top 10. I am not afraid of saying that. I believe that. And I believe that with Kevin Blue and what we're doing with the women's program as well, with the professional programs in the country, I believe we have a big future here.
And this is really important, because I know we've talked about this, and I've seen it too. Everyone will pay attention during the big events. So the Olympics, and everyone just absolutely loves it. The World Cup, and everyone absolutely loves it. And then, you know, oftentimes sponsors might disappear. But if you've got to be in it for the long haul, and again, we'll just focus on the men's side here, but when you have a domestic league, and you've attended a lot of the games, like, how important is it? And I'm not going to try and put CPL on the same level as MLS, MLS on the same level of EPL, but it is a place where Canadian players can play. So how important is it to have sponsors who recognize that, who invest in that, between pro and national team in this country?
Yes. So, you know, I mean, what'd you say? A nuclear detonation? Is that what the word you described?
Kind of sounds scary.
Yeah, that is. But I do think that no one in this room, even myself, who's been in this sport my entire life, really understands what next summer is going to be like. And it's an opportunity, I think, to bring everyone together. Like, from the moment I got the job, I was like, we need to create a movement. We need to make household names out of not just Alfonso Davies and Jonathan David, but Moise Bombito, Alistair Johnston. You know, you can go down the list of incredible talent, Tejan Buchanan, Jacob Schaffelberg. There's actually an incredible amount of highly talented, incredible personalities in this team that I think this country needs to become familiar with, the same way they've been with Wayne Gretzky and Sidney Crosby and all the way down, right? So... And a big part of that is, how do we all work together? How do we work together with stakeholders in the community? How do we work together with high net worth individuals to help support the charity? How do we work with good sponsorships and marketing? How do we create better professionalism and standards for how we behave within the organization? How do we operate with the women's team and the women's leagues? Same with the men's leagues. I've been to women's leagues programs. I haven't been to a match yet, but I've watched them and I've supported them. And then ultimately, how do we help our best athletes have the best opportunity to be successful and make our country proud on the biggest stages? And by the way, next summer when we play at home, since I've been here, we're undefeated at home, right? And our plan is to never change that, to continue to push forward so that when we play at home, because we're always playing down in the U.S., we're always playing, you know, in unfriendly atmospheres. When we've played in Canada, our last game we played Honduras in Canada, they went to the semifinal 6-0. Like, there's a big difference of the energy of when we play at home, what it's like to play in front of our people, what it's like to be Canadian, what it's like to sing the national anthem, every part of it. And we have to make sure that next summer that the power and energy around those games and the entire experience for the team is at the highest level.
Besides the very slight Wisconsin accent, I mean, people can look at you and say, this is a Canadian, the way you talk about Canada.
Yeah.
You
guys, A. It's a I'll throw in an A. In
Are there. You going to throw an A in there?
I thought he was from Manitoba.
Did you? It's ever so slight, but it's there, Jesse. But here's the thing. The way you talk about Canada, the way you represent Canada, you are an honorary Canadian. But I'm wondering, even though you've been around the game for a very long time, being the head coach of the national team, what's maybe something that stood out to you between the Canadian soccer culture compared to others? And maybe where do you want to see it go?
So I took... this past January, because everyone told me that Canada is a great place to tour in January, I went from Halifax to Vancouver. I went to 9 cities in 10 days, and I gave 9 coaching clinics. And what I learned about each one of those clinics, Like, look, I'd start a clinic, and maybe it'd be about this many people, maybe double, something like that, right? And I could start the clinic, and I could look around the room, and there was maybe, like, seven people that were looking at me like, I don't know about this guy. Like, I don't, you know, I'm here maybe because I have to do some coaching education or someone told me that I need to come. Or, you know, and it wasn't that my goal was to change their vision over the an hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours that we spent together, but it was to try to use my experiences and expertise and what we're trying to do with the national team just as an open springboard for the possibility of what these other coaches might think about the game and how they might be able to instruct it. And I've been very careful because I grew up in the U.S., right? And we had, for 30 years living there, we had people coming into our country telling us what to do with our sport that were from Belgium, France, England, Germany, all these countries. Okay, they're good at their sport, and there's things to be learned there, but they don't know. They didn't know us. They didn't know what it's like to be an American and to grow up playing the sport in our country and what our neighborhoods were like and our families. And I'm very careful with that, with being the Canadian national team coach. I'm very proud to be the Canadian national team coach, but I know that the most important thing is that I need to represent it the right way and do it carefully and in a way that unites people and not that divides them. And so everything I've done in the community has been about being supportive, being positive, being optimistic, and then also understanding and learning more about what the people are. And what I learned on that trip was that as much as there's a bunch of different communities and very proud people working in the sport in all these different communities, which often leads to being very protective of what they have, that I saw a lot more openness than I've seen anywhere else I've been, and more people thinking, this is interesting, I want to try this, I want to be part of this. And I was actually shocked. At how open I was, how well I was received, how open people were, and how excited they were about the things that we're doing with the national team. So even then, when I talked about creating a movement, I changed my whole vision for that because I now believe that it's actually possible instead of just a talking point.
Just don't ever say ice hockey.
Okay.
People won't like it. It's just hockey.
We say this in Europe all the time.
Don't say ice hockey. It's just hockey. But and also, is it Tim Hortons or Starbucks?
Well. For me, I'm not a coffee snob, but Tim Hortons is good. They're all good. I'll drink whatever coffee.
We're going to take questions from the audience in just a moment, but I do want to ask Bob, you know, everything that's just been happening again, the CPL's in its seventh season, the Northern Super League is in its inaugural year and doing great. National teams, as you mentioned, the men are ranked the highest in 28, the women continue to be top 10. Is it also fulfilling when you are a partner of the organization and just seeing this type of success and being a part of that?
Honestly, the very first thing I'd have to say is we spoke a lot about the past with Canada Soccer. The present to me is so bright with the addition of Kevin Blue and Jesse. The positivity and just the winning attitude they bring, it's changed the entire outlook, and leadership is really what's going to drive where this game goes. I just see a great, great future for soccer in Canada, and just to be as a corporate sponsor on a personal level, just to be a small part of it, driving that change, you know, it's really fulfilling, absolutely. From a corporate standpoint, definitely brand-wise, we got into this with a plan, knowing that World Cup was going to come here. But I'd say from a corporate standpoint, it's exceeded even beyond those expectations already, and World Cup hasn't happened yet. So we're going to continue on this path, and I think, you know, some of my team is here. Everybody is very proud of this, proud of our involvement in the beautiful game in Canada.
I love it. I could listen to you talk about the World Cup coming, Jesse, all the time because it gets me excited. If I have to hear a politician talk about it one more time, they depress me. Keep talking, keep uplifting, keep telling people this is going to be a great thing that's going to be coming next year. We can take some questions.
Hi there, Jesse. This must be the fifth time I've heard you speak in the last kind of 7 months. And every time you do speak, it's fresh, it's invigorating. So I really do appreciate that. My question is about Europe. You've coached in two of the top leagues in Europe and done an incredible job, may I add. How far is Canada away from, say, one of your players says, look, I can go to Europe or I can stay in Canada, play in the CPL, maybe even MLS. How far away are we from that, would you say?
Well, I think we probably have more players playing at bigger clubs than we've ever had, right? And we have more young players. Like, there's probably 20 to 25 players that maybe you've not heard of that much playing in academies at Feyenoord and Hoffenheim. And, you know, so there's the word is getting out more and more that Canada has real talent. And it reminds me a little bit of when I was young in 1994 when the World Cup was there. And so if you've heard me talk, I may repeat this story, and I'm sorry if I'm saying it again and you've heard it. 1994, I'm 20 years old. We get the World Cup at home. I'm in the stands watching four matches. I'm at the semifinal of the World Cup. Hristo Stoichkov, the reigning Ballon d'Or player, was in that match. I watched Marco Echeverri get a red card live. I watched the American team play. 2 years later, MLS started. I was playing on a team with Marco Echeverri, with John Harkes, with Jeff Agus. And then two years after that, I was playing on a team with Hristo Stoichkov. And I thought I was living my dream. And I played 14 years in MLS, had a pretty good career. I won a lot of titles, okay? I wasn't that good a player, but I won a lot of titles. And then I went on to coach. And I started, my goal was to learn to coach and to learn the trade and to coach in MLS and see what that would be like. And I did well, and then I was given opportunities to go to Europe. When I went to RB Salzburg, it was the first year that Salzburg was in the Champions League. And the first interview I did in German, they asked me, was it your dream to always coach in Champions League? I said, it was my dream to live in Europe so I could watch the Champions League on TV at night.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a reality. It was absolutely not even possible to dream to coach in Champions League or play in Champions. No chance, right? Then I went on to the Bundesliga, the Premier League. Now I'm going to be coaching in the World Cup. And the reason I tell that story is because we need those stories here in Canada. I am a direct result of the U.S. hosting the World Cup in 1994. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't be here. And we need to look back 20 years from now and say our players, our coaches, our administrators, our sport directors, they have a chance to compete on the world stage and show that Canada has really damn good people in this sport as well.
Jesse, I'd like to ask you a question, but I fear I'd never give the mic back. Okay. So my question's for Bob. Usually...
Did you plant that?
Yeah. Okay. I got nervous to asking this when you said you have people from work here. Usually, sponsorship is so transactional, right? We give you money, you put our logo alongside your logo, you guys get big, everyone likes and buys more washing machines. Yet, you use sponsorship, in your own words, to drive change. And that feels like a shift as to how sponsorship's used. Simply, why? Why that shift? That seems massive.
You're looking for my evil corporate answer? Is that what
you'd like to give the crowd?
As I said, the mentality of the consumer, the voice of the consumer, how a consumer chooses what brands they're going to buy, whether you look at the 1950s, 1970s, 2000s till now, it has evolved. The value that a consumer places on brands, it could be absolutely nothing or something that they will never change. That's what we're seeing today. So either you own the heart of the consumer or you don't. Like some people, they don't care about the brands. So in order to really earn the heart of a consumer, yeah, you have to be genuine. You have to really align with that consumer's value set, with that consumer's opinions, and you have to align with you have to be telling the truth. It's a lot of brands, I'm not gonna call out a particular brand, but Pride is one of those areas where there's been high amount of corporate involvement, but how many of those actual sponsors follow through in their DNA from point A to point Z that are actually living that way, that are actually presenting themselves that way? It's very, very, it's actually a small percentage. They limit themselves to painting rainbows on their stores, etc. I have a lot of friends in that community. They see right through it. They understand it because they live it. So if I say, as GE, we are supporting soccer, the beautiful game in Canada, it has to be from A to Z. And I believe at the end of that journey, a consumer is going to see it. And what I'm hoping for is not to sell a single washing machine. I want to sell my brand to them for life. I want them to be GE consumers. I could be wrong, and I may not be here next year, but so far it's working out. Good answer?
Not to steal it from directly beside you. This is a question for all of you, including you, Andy. That, Jesse, you mentioned something about our development programs in Canada and how they could, I mean, to say it politely, be better, especially relative to other nations. So I was curious on all of your takes on, are there countries or brands that are leading the charge in development programs, whether it is for youth or whether it is for women's sport? What can we learn from some of the best models around the world? And what are the roadblocks that we need to see lifted in Canada to make that happen?
Well, recency bias, I can just look at the Women's World Cup as well and how Australia came out immediately and talked about the amount of funding they were going to, in particular, put into the women's game and just how much that can also help from the grassroots level on. So when you get a lot of that government support too, I think that matters. And I know you've had panels already earlier today talking about some of the obstacles that we face in this country, even when it comes to just building soccer-specific stadiums. The CPL, the NSL, they don't need these 20,000-seat stadiums. They just want 7,000 to 8,000, but we can't get government approval sometimes for that. It's very difficult to find these places to have people go and play, I think, even at not just so much like rec leagues, but I'm talking about when you have spotted somebody. Do we even have like a national, like, I think there's been so much talk.
We're going to.
I mean, like, there's not even like this area where the national team and younger players can even come together.
It's more important for the youth teams.
That's exactly
it. We're building that.
So it's got to happen. But to me, right away, Australia just stands out as somebody who has started to really kind of, you know, when the government got involved immediately, jumping off that diving board of a World Cup. And I think that's what we're trying to get at, is we have the World Cup coming here. Let's do it, right?
I use this example in my interview with Canada Soccer. And my man Bob here, his family is South Korean, and I use South Korea as the example. In 2002, they had a coach named Gus Hiddink, a Dutch coach. He came in, he changed the style of play, he created a movement in the country, he created this energy around the team. When the 2002 World Cup came, it was Japan and Korea hosting it together, which is similar to now. The Korean team was a movement like nothing we've ever seen in our sport, and they went to the semifinal, right? And so much of what Gus did with them was create a style of play that fit the players and help them believe that they could be great, and used the energy in the nation to support the team so that they felt invincible. That is what I'm trying to do here with this team at this time.
So I think I echo what everyone said here. The only thing I would say is I'm going to switch it over to college sports. College sports have different sources of revenue, different ways to generate money to keep the programs going, whether it's football, basketball, et cetera. One of the largest supporters of revenue is boosters, the community, former people that have gone to those schools. And that's a huge source of what provides the facilities, et cetera. To be quite frank with you, our women's and men's team, they operate on a shoestring comparative to any of that those top nations that we talked about in the world. It's not even close. When you have to start worrying about what friendlies can I take? The friendlies are games where the teams get to practice and play together. when you have to budget how many friendlies you can afford to send your women's team to or your men's team to, you don't have enough money, right? So it comes down to, I believe we have the talent in this country. We have obviously the right organization, the right coach. Now we have to give them every resource. This is the number 28th ranked team, the men, and the women are even better, in the world. Imagine if we actually put our effort, even one half the effort we put into hockey, behind it. That time is coming with World Cup. That's really what it comes down to. It, believe it or not, it's still a dollars and cents world. And if we just put that effort in, this is already these are already teams we can be proud of. I believe there's a lot more to go. It's exciting.
One or two more questions here.
Jesse, you mentioned you watched Stoichkov in 94. I was just wondering if you remember who they played that game and the score of that game.
Obviously an Italian in the Baggio. Baggio
Roberto.
Scored, and it was 2-1, no? But Stoichkov didn't score. I think it was Lent, and it was at Baggio, and Baggio had two. He had a penalty and then another goal. Remember, and he was wearing the electrodes on his calf. He had the calf, like the most famous calf in the world. He was hurt.
I don't know how you guys remember all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's because we care too much.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the problem.
He still had, he had the rat tail at that point still, too, right, Lance?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, you hear me? Okay, perfect. I'm just coming on. My question is a little bit of a different aspect. I'm coming as an aspect as a soccer dad, as a Uber driver that goes 4 times a week on a soccer, still play for U11. Coming back on the financial. Originally, you can hear my accent. I'm originally from France. I've been here for 20 years, proud Canadian now. One of the questions is my son, you know, younger, but play somehow competitive in soccer league, but because we can afford it. There's a lot of team out there and a lot of players that cannot afford it. I'm talking to this conversation about with a lot of parents that to go to a certain club, obviously there's some standard. And for example, you know, TFC, they have a great, to a certain age, 14, 15 years old, that the parents don't have to pay anymore because they get selected. But before that, most of the club, you have to pay. And to be honest, if I was in my position, my son will not play soccer competitively. So that's one of the questions. And obviously, I see the Raptors when they won the final, and obviously you see this beam, and you know, even in France, we saw in 1998, you see the soccer. Obviously, France is a big soccer nation, but when they won, you know, it was a big impact, right? But when I talked to my friend in France, and when I said that I spent X amount of $1,000 per year for my son to play, and they tell me, oh, I just pay €200 per year, you know, even my mom cannot understand that I spend this money for my son to play. So that's why a little bit of the question, and I, you know, it's not political, but I'm just coming as a father. What do you think? Obviously, I have high expectation of the soccer, and I'm hopefully, you know, we'll be in the final role. But that's just, maybe it's not a question, but it's a comment coming from somebody that lives a life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Look, I mean, there's a lot of things. Like when you look at any country in the world, what are the resources and what are the challenges? And we could go through all of those different things, right? I mean, one of the big resources for me is multiculturalism. And even if you look at our team, it's almost all first and second generation Canadians, you know, that come from different places, but like are so proud to represent Canada, which is, it's been really, I think, heartwarming for me to be their coach and see how their differences make them stronger and not weaker. Like that's been a beautiful, beautiful byproduct of the entire experience. Look, when it comes to kids, you're right. In North America, we it's big business. We charge too much for the sport. We're changing that slowly. But I will say that I've also found from stories that I've heard, again, when I've traveled around, that when there are the kids that are struggling, that most of the communities find a way to support those kids and get them into the right programs and get them into the right teams. It shouldn't be like that. You know, like when I was in Germany, my son didn't pay any fees for the club he paid for. We were in a town called Leipzig. There were 80 clubs within 15-minute drive. No one really even had to travel much. Traffic's not like Toronto. And they all had clubhouses. They all had a men's team that was earning money, whether they were in the first division or the fourth division. And then the entire club was supported through that, and through how much beer they drink at the clubhouse. Okay, but yeah, there's a more The world in life in Europe and what the sport means, it's more ingrained into the family life and in for centuries or a century at least, what it means to be part of the club and support it and raise funds for it. And so it means that the kids always have a place to play. And we're stuck a little bit in between here, but we're still, I think, in the right way from what I've seen in this country, still providing for the kids that need it. Not maybe not as much as we would like to, but I still think because of the communal aspect that we're getting a lot of what we want.
I own dogs, not humans. So, but I do hear a lot. I dove into this though because there was a lot of parents, whether they're playing hockey, soccer, basketball, baseball, like you name it, and I was blown away by a lot of the prices and just some of the stuff that we looked into. You know, we do treat it like a big business. If parents are going to pay, why would they say no? Secondly, I think in Canada in particular, our population is smaller. So we don't have the amount of bodies maybe that other countries would have. Also, geography, our travel is greater. I mean, you just mentioned it too. When you have these clubs that are just literally within 15 minutes, I know parents who are literally taking their kids from Halifax to Vancouver for competitions, right? So our geography alone ends up increasing the price of a lot of things. And I think we are trying to create that ecosystem here, right? Like, that's why it's so important. Like, I think the CPL is trying to create this relationship with League One, which at some point League One can create relationships as well with these other youth teams. And when you start to have that system, then maybe that higher team starts to fund the lower team and they don't have to pay as much. We've never had that ecosystem in Canada before, and we're trying to get that off the ground. And at some point, the women would like to do the same thing. A lot of League One players, League One Ontario, Quebec, you know, BC, they've made up the NSL in its first year, right? So you're already seeing that partnership, but, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day either, right? It takes a little bit of time. I just say, right when it figures itself out, your kids are going to be in university and you'll be paying for something else. All right. I think that's it. You guys get to enjoy some food and drink. Thank you. Really appreciate you sitting through the panel. Thank you so much.